508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet. I climbed down up inside. I pulled the choke and I turned the key. But the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Today is June 14th of 2014. And for the next 2 hours, you're stuck with me. But we're going to have fun. We're going to talk about car repair issues. We can talk about any part of the car. We can talk about recalls. We can talk about you got an estimate the other day. We can help you in a whole lot of ways. And if we don't know, we'll tell you we don't know. And our job here is just to guide you the best we can. We're not here to sell you something. We're not here to take your money. We're not here for any other reason other than to help you understand the industry that I was brought up in, help you understand the industry in and of itself, and when to and how to recognize when people have your interest in front of their own or their interests in front of yours. It just kind of makes a really big difference with respect on how you decide to interpret that. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by a good friend of mine, Bob Jones, Vietnam veteran, fighter pilot, Boy Scout, Eagle Scout, great guy. Bob and Steve at Quality Transmission in Tempe, they do a lot of work on transmissions, transfer cases, drive axles, just about everything to do with the drivetrain. They're on McClintock, north of University in Tempe, south of the 202, and they're a shop that we refer to on a regular basis, and we have other shops in the valley, but geographically, then if they get referred, shops get the referrals basically by on a map. But Bob does a really good job in the East Valley, and Bob really, really does a good job with customers of ours, which we send him as well as others in the event they were in the West Valley. What the difference is, and let me start off with a story. A gentleman had his car towed in here, and we determined the transmission had failed in a big way. So because we don't do internal transmission work, we are not set up to take the transmission apart and rebuild it. We gave him an estimate of about $3,800. And that $3,800 was this: the labor to take the transmission out and put a new one in, the newly rebuilt transmission, the fluid, the flush, the filter, all the sales tax, shop supplies, and environmental charges. It was like $3,800. And we typically overbid by a couple hundred dollars and maybe even 5% just to make sure that we come in under our estimate. He said, you know, I'm a student. I'm not sure that's going to work for me. I need to decide what I'm going to do. So he got on the phone and he called around and he got a couple of other shops to say, oh, that's an $1,800 transmission. So right off the bat, one of us is going to look really, really bad, because I'm sitting out there with a $3,600 bid, and now we've got somebody else that's going to do the same thing for half as much money. So I sit down and talk with him, and he explained the ramifications and what kind of conversation you should have with a transmission shop, and that is, I have this car, and let's just assume that the transmission needs to be rebuilt or replaced. Do you do that? Yes. Give me some kind of a ballpark. This young man was in the worst possible situation, and he was getting estimates, like I said, from 18 to 38, and we knew we were on the top end because of the shops we were directing him to and some of the shops that other people had directed him to. These are guys that rebuild transmissions. So they take them apart, fix them, put them back together. So I asked him to let me know where he ended up at and how it turned out. And I made sure that I did the best I could to instruct him or and help him understand how important it was to get final figures and to not let him take it apart until you have a final figure. Because once they hit it apart, then they know you can't take it anywhere else, and that final figure can be anything. So I've walked that path before. This gentleman also, there was something interesting that came up. He had a road service, and the road service was tied to his car insurance, and his car insurance paid the bill to have it towed to our facility, but at the time we didn't know what was wrong with the car. No one did. It just, no one knew what was wrong. Well, when it got here, we determined that the transmission was bad, and that other than just replacing the unit as an entire unit, we're incapable of rebuilding it. So when he called to have it towed to another facility, the road service said, no, we can't tow you. You're already at a place of repair. So we offered to call his insurance company and explain to them that when it came in, we didn't know what the repair was.
Call our bill.
And right now, we're actually not the place of repair. So it would seem to me, and I'm not going to tell you how to do your job, insurance company, but it would seem to me that we might need to tow him someplace else to a place that's capable of rebuilding his transmission. And I don't know how that turned out either. Most insurance companies don't do that, but there is that caveat on some of them that says to the closest place of repair. If that's the case, and then you get there and you find out that this guy only does oil changes and you need, you know, an engine put in, then the discussion has to start over, and most of the time you're going to lose. So I'm just giving you this story the way I see it. It really has little to do with anything else. It's just a matter of that's what happens in our industry. Good morning, Bill. How can I help you?
I have a question about some preventative maintenance on a 10-year-old Honda Accord. It's got about 75,000 miles on it, and it's never had the hoses, belts, or timing chain changed. What is the interval where you recommend it should be changed?
And give me that year again.
It's an 04 Accord V6.
Okay. So it's 10. It's 10 years old. How many miles are on it?
75,000.
Okay. I don't know if it has a chain or a belt, but I think it has a belt. And if it has a belt, then I would probably... The belt comes with a variety of things. I suggest to you that when we do the front of the motor, which includes the timing belt, that if you allow us to look and open our view up wide, here's the deal. We're going to open up the patient's chest to expose the heart. While we're there, do you want us to clean up the lungs because we're already there? do you want us to pump the stomach because we're already there? Do you want us to do some other work there that's substantially less now that we get there? So it's going to cost $800 to get there. But the water pump's there. There's 5 bolts. It might cost $20 to $30 to $40 to pull it off. But if I have to go back in there a week, a month later, then it's going to cost $800 to get there again. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, it does, because of the labor. I mean,
exactly.
You might as well take care of everything. So,
right.
With 75,000 miles and 10 years old, what would you recommend be done at this point?
Who's driving it, and how far, is this car going out of town with kids?
No.
Okay, so is it a local commuter going to work and back?
Yeah, it's local commuter. In the winter, we take it on a ski trip up to Colorado, maybe.
Okay. I'm. If you hadn't said the winter trip, then I would have said, you know what? If you're gonna, you should make it through the summer, no problem. So this is something that you do before next May. But if we're going up into the Colorado, I say I'd go ahead and just do it now. I would do the timing belt, the water pump. I would do all the components of the timing belt, which is the tensioner, and idler pulley. And cam and crank seals, because that's just really all easy stuff. And like I said, we're already there. So I would do the nose of the motor right now. And I think at the bottom, at the end of the day, we're going to have to remove a couple of the hoses to access the front of the motor. So, yes, we should replace those hoses while we're there, because you've already paid to take them off, or at least you've paid to disconnect one end, maybe not the other. So yeah, you could wrap that timing belt, the water pump, and the hoses and the cooling system flush. You could wrap all that into something. And I'm not good enough to bid it that way, but I'm thinking we're $2,000 down to probably $1,300. That's going to be the window. I don't think anybody's going to be below $1,300. I don't think anybody's going to be over $2,000. And then again the belts. That's another example on the fan belts. We're going to take the fan belts off to get to the timing belt and get to the water pump. What difference does it make if we put the old ones back on or new ones back on? The price to you is only the price of the belts. That makes sense?
Yeah, I'm just looking for the bottom line, though. You say $1,300 to $2,000?
Yeah, because there's just a lot of variables, and frankly, I'm just not that good. I'm thinking to myself that the timing belt's probably, just a bare bones timing belt's probably going to be in the vicinity of $500 or $600. Then we got a water pump that's going to be over $100. I'm doing this out loud, but there's so much more to it. And so I'm looking at all the labor and I'm thinking to myself, we're probably going to have, $800 in labor by the time we're done, taking the entire nose of that off, and then all the other stuff, the flush, the oil change, the filters, the coolant, the parts, the shop supplies, the Myers Spencer of Texas, and all that kind of stuff. So the easiest thing for you to do is most of us have computers, and if you'll email me, I'll have my daughter Andy look up an 04 Accord, and I can pretty much guarantee you out of 160,000 repair orders, I can find one in the last 2 years that's an 04 where I've done a timing belt and a water pump.
Right, if you would compare you doing it with a Honda dealer.
You know, I think in the independent market, I think that the dollars, that we're still playing games with all that other stuff, but let me just tell you this. In my geographical area, the average labor rate is $104. Now, there's a couple of $80 and $85 guys in there, and there's a couple of $125, $130 guys in there. Okay? So the average is $104. And I'm at, it's actually $103.98, and I'm at $104. I think a lot of guys do that. We find ourselves in the middle of the range. $125 is a guy who specializes in a high-end import. And so that kind of sets him out there. But then we got another guy who's doing everything for $60 an hour, but when I'm bidding against him, my 1 hour labor is his 2 hours labor. So his 2 hours times 60 is $120. My 1 hour of 104 is $104. So I'm $16 cheaper than he is, even though he's at $60 an hour and I'm at $104 an hour, all that makes sense.
Yeah, but I still didn't get an answer. What about you as opposed to the Honda dealer?
I'm going to talk about the independent as opposed to the Honda dealership. The independent typically is going to be between 10 and 20% less than the dealer. That isn't much on a $600
one minute.
But it is on a bigger bill than that. So it's your call.
The final result the same?
Yes. Yes, it should be. I don't think that their technicians, let's talk about your Honda. The guys at the Honda dealerships live and breathe Hondas all day long. They're gonna be slightly better than independent shops who goes from Alfa Romeos to Mercury Zephyrs. Okay? They're gonna be better, but this is maintenance. This isn't diagnostics. This isn't chasing why the speedometer goes crazy. This is maintenance. So, if they're both ASE masters, then the answer to your question is unequivocally yes. The skill level of each one of them is identical because they've been tested and they've been determined that they're masters and they have the skills and the experience and the time saying that they're masters. So, let me ask you this. Who you been using?
Showcase Honda.
Okay. So, that's real easy. Call Showcase. I'm going to take a break. You stay right there because I have an answer for you, but I got to take a break. We'll be right. Alan, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960.
The mechanic raised up from under my hood and he shook his head.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Mark Salem, and you're listening to KKNT Under the Hood. 10 o'clock till noon on Saturday, we're talking about car and car repair. Let me finish up with Bill real quick. Here's some interesting things that I did during the break. I wasn't going to tell you what it was all about. I was just going to tell you I'm going to tell you that Showcase Honda has an A-plus rating at the Better Business Bureau. That's pretty doggone good. Okay, then we're going to go down to their complaint summary. And then you can go look at mine. It's okay with me. They have 18 advertising and sales issues, 1 billing, 1 delivery issue, 4 warranty issues, and 33 product and services complaints. And a total of 57 closed complaints. Now, you can read the complaints. You can look at the complaints. You can do all of that. But in spite of 57 complaints in the last 3 years, they still have an A-plus rating, which tells me, as a former member of the board of directors of the Better Business Bureau for many, many, many years, that they're doing a good job. They're bending when they should. They're acquiescing when they should. They're admitting they're wrong when they should. And perhaps every once in a while you stand firm because you've got an unreasonable customer with an unreasonable expectation and the Better Business Bureau supported them. They got an A-plus rating. So that's not bad. With respect to dollars and cents, typically it's going to be, like I said, 10% one way or another. But you have, now, if you're up on Camelback, is that right, Bill?
Yeah, my office is at 12th Street in Missouri.
Okay, so up there we have Indian School in 16th Street. It's Martin's Auto. He's capable of doing that. 25th Street Auto, 25th and Indian School, he's capable of doing that. We've got Inman and Sons, 7th Street in Maryland. They're capable. Kelly Clark, 12th and Glendale. I got a central corridor right there that I've got quite a few shops. You could ask them to ballpark it and ask them, but at the end of the day, I think the parts, now they're going to say, oh, you got to put Honda parts on your car. But the problem is there's no such place as a Honda water pump manufacturer. They buy that water pump made by somebody in China or Japan or in Montana. Doesn't really make any difference. So there's really no such thing as that. So don't let that fool you. But that, those are your options that you have.
Okay.
But yeah. I'd probably have that short list done before, maybe at the end of the, I'll tell you where the slow time is. Don't tell anybody, but September, right after kids start school, and actually they're starting school in the middle of July this year. So right after school starts, business drops off to virtually nothing because all the vacations are over, the parents are back to work, the kids are back to school, and the weather's gonna change at the end of August, 1st of September. So then all the air conditioning and all the water stuff goes away. So if you can price it appropriately and get it in there during the slow time, first of all, you want to be hurrying up on your car, and second of all, you may benefit by some kind of a discount.
Okay. Can I give a shameless plug for my radio show tomorrow?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Middle East Radio Forum at noon. We're discussing Iraq, as you can understand.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you ever listened to the show, but...
Oh, no. I do. You know, it's crazy that we were just there. I'm not going to open this door very wide. I just, when I hear they got now they're asking for our help again. And even that there's somebody crazy enough out there to be doing stuff that the Taliban is going, icky? Is that a right analysis?
Well, it's really not the Taliban there. Well, that's in Afghanistan. We're talking about the Shias and the Sunnis killing each other in Iraq right now.
Okay, but let me ask you a question. I thought, and maybe I'm wrong, I thought somebody said the bad guys in one of these countries stepped aside from this recent conflict and said, God, that's brutal, which was, I kind of...
Al-Qaeda, I think, said that this group is too violent for them.
Exactly.
Go figure. But, you know, these are all bad guys, all of them. I mean, the government of Iraq is allied with Iran that wants to kill the United States. And the rebels, you know, that's the Muslim Brotherhood. And it's the Shias, excuse me, the Sunnis. They want to kill, you know, people and, you know, destroy the United States. It's just it's a mess. There's just no good conflict from my perspective.
And I have one thing to tell you. I have a good friend of mine who's from Jerusalem, and his mom and dad live there. And I guess they all serve military. And evidently at one time or another, he was one of those secret agent guys. And something he told me 10 years ago that has stuck in my head. He says, Mark, you have to understand that there's 30 million Jewish people in a small state the size of Virginia.
No, there's 6, not 30.
Oh, 6 million.
Yeah.
Okay. And thank you for 6 million surrounded by how many million Muslims?
Well, it depends how far you want to go out. There's over a billion Muslims, but that takes the whole world.
Okay, let's say...
I mean, you're talking about 300 million Muslims.
Okay, good. 6 million Jewish people, surrounded by 300 million Muslims, and he said they're scared to death of us. I'd kind of learn how to handle that. I would think if I was in the war machine era, I'd figure out what they're doing different than everybody else.
Well, I mean, it's really a shame. I mean, Israel is really the size of Maricopa County, if you want to bring it down to something local here.
Okay.
And, you know, they do all these medical advances, all these scientific achievements, and you've got the Islamic world trying to destroy them. And it's just crazy. I mean, Israel is a benefit to the whole world.
Yeah. All right, well, listen, thank you. When's that show going to air?
Noon, every Sunday, noon to 1 o'clock. Okay. I'm now in the 11th year of broadcast, if you can believe that.
Okay, well, congratulations to you, and thank you for calling.
And thank you very much for your great advice.
You betcha. Thank you.
Bye.
All right, and let's see where we're at. I have to go back over to here, and I have to find my clock, Jeremy. And how am I doing on the clock?
You got 2.5 minutes, and we got Tom waiting in the wings.
All righty, Tom, go ahead, buddy. How can we help you?
Morning, Mark. Got a 97 Jeep Grand Cherokee 4.0, and I was wondering on the catalytic converter or muffler, can they plug up intermittently?
That would be very unusual for it to plug up intermittently. Are you working on this yourself? Can you?
Yeah, I can. Right. I've been working on old Caterpillar equipment for years and years.
All I want you to do is I want you to drill an 1/8-inch hole about 10 inches in front of the cat in the exhaust pipe, and an 1/8-inch hole in the pipe leading out of the back of the cat. And I want you to drill them somewhere where you can just reach underneath there and you know, and with a gloved hand and put your hand over 6 inches away from the hole. Then when you think that it's plugged, if you have somebody with you, or take a 2x4 and just set it on the throttle, or, you know, just bring the RPMs up a little bit. If you crawl underneath there and the front hole is blowing air out like a banshee and the back hole is like whisper, won't even blow out a match, you got it. If you want to plug those holes up, if you don't have a welder, put a couple of sheet metal screws in there.
I've got a welder. But, okay, yeah, because it'll drive 15, 20 miles and then fall on its face there. You kick it into neutral and the RPMs come right back up on it and everything. I drove around with a fuel gauge on it.
One
fuel pressure's good. It's running 50 to 54 pounds.
Okay, we're going to have to put a scanner on there and we're going to have to watch the trim. We're going to have to watch to see the fuel, because if the fuel pressure is good, and if the catalytic converter plugs up in that kind of a thing, then that means we've got a biscuit that's moving around. So if you, tomorrow morning, if you get underneath there and just kick it with a boot, if there's any noise, any clunking going around inside that catalytic converter, then the biscuit is come loose and it can get cockwise and it kind of plugs up the exhaust like a potato in the exhaust pipe. Then all of a sudden the biscuit moves back around and now we become unplugged and we're fine. But there has to be a noise associated with the biscuit moving around, and you oftentimes find that when you kick it first thing in the morning.
Okay.
All righty.
We'll do that then. Thank
Good
you,
luck
sir.
To you. You betcha. Jeremy?
You got about 10 seconds.
All right. Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to bail around. Nevertheless, we'll be back in just a few minutes. 602-508-0960.
Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again.
That's the way I feel right now. When I get done here, I'm going to load up a couple horses, head north, and ride with some friends up in the mountains on Monday. So I'll tell you something, another secret about Willie Nelson and Mark Salem and what we have in common. My family's going to kill me for telling you this. This is the truth, though. 100 years ago, when we went into business in 1979, we had to come up with the name of the corporation. Now, I come from a large family, and there's lots of men in the family. And when I first got into car repair, they would refer to me as the Brother Bandit. So if anybody had a car question, call the Bandit. That's what they call me. So when it came time to put together our corporation, I named it Bandit Brothers, which today, many years later, disturbs our bookkeeping staff and my wife and my daughters to no end, because they say, you have no idea how embarrassing it is to go to the bank and make deposits from car repair to an account named Bandit Brothers. And I said, you know what? You just got to toughen up, cowgirls. So the name of our court, and now Willie just came out with a new album called The Bandit Brothers. And I don't know if it's about car repair or not, but I did hear that the other day, and I've never heard anybody use Bandit Brothers before, but that's the name of our corporation. So if you ever had to hunt us down, you could do it that way. Nevertheless, let me tell you about something that's kind of special, and that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil over to Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around, I think him and Willie were born about the same time. I think they were in the 1860s or something like that. But I can tell you right now that Phil has gray hair. Automatic Transmission Exchange is in Phoenix. It's on 40th and Washington, and they've been around a very, very long time. I remember him back when I was in high school. And the idea is that he's really, really good. I like Phil for the Central Valley area, and I'll tell you why. You call him and you talk to him, and within 3 or 4 minutes, you know he knows what he's talking about. And you know when he gives you a number, it's a good number. And he knows, and you'll know real quick, that he's honest and dependable. And the only way you're going to see his abrasive side, if you want him to believe, or you want to tell him something that he knows not to be true. or perhaps you're telling him something someone else told you that was the truth, and perhaps he doesn't believe that. But he's not abrasive. He's a nice guy. And so if you're looking for a good auto repair shop that is specifically to automatic transmissions, then go to ATE, Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Ask for Phil. Tell him Mark sent you and tell him that Mark was talking bad about him on the radio. He'll be happy about that. Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. When it comes to car repair, obviously, it's a difficult transition. It's a difficult transition for people to understand what happens when you get involved in the car repair industry. But there's bandits all over this industry. And I admit to that as well. But here's something that's interesting. Ford has announced that it's going to be recalling the fuel economy ratings on a whole bunch of 2013 and 14 model year cars after errors were discovered in the company's internal testing data. And EPA has been notified. Worrying for Ford, the vast majority of these vehicles affected are hybrids. Let me get this straight. We got a problem with the EPA ratings or the average MPG ratings, the economy ratings, and we made a mistake on the hybrids. And then they talk about the Fiesta range, and they talk about the Fusion, the C-Max hybrid models are going to be dropped by 3, the Fusions are going to be dropped by 5, and the MKZ drops 7. They didn't tell you exactly where they dropped from, but I'm thinking we're talking about a 25 to 35% drop. Let's look at the Edge. The Edge claimed 19 and 27, and it's actually ours is getting 16 and a half, and the average is supposed to be 22, and that's going to change too. So it's just you wonder with computer and technology how mathematical errors get past us. How do mathematical errors get past us? So anyway, it's an interesting thing where Ford has decided to lower the MPG ratings on 6 very popular vehicles, and I'm not saying that it's good or bad. I'm glad that they did that, but that just goes to show you that a lot of the information that's disseminated, you have to determine this. You have to determine if it's fact or if it's advertising or if it's marketing. And I think all of you will agree that those are 3 important designations that we need to put something under. Because advertising and marketing is quite different than factual scientific data. And God bless those scientists that know that they know everything. I hope they go to another shop other than mine. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Saturday morning. My name is Mark Salem. I'm your host for the next couple of, till noon. We're talking about car and car repair. If you'd like to join us, the lines are wide open. Wide open. We don't have anybody. Jeremy, just me and Jeremy sitting here talking to one another. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And in the old days of radio, when cell phones first came around and they cost $10 a minute, Jeremy, do you remember that? Don't say yes.
I do.
Jeremy.
Yes, I do.
You had to be 5 years old back then.
I may be a little older than you think.
Okay. Do you remember in radio when we used to let the cell phones go to the front of the line?
No, I don't.
Yeah, see, I do. I remember that if you called in on a cell phone, you went to the front of the line. Because the minutes were expensive and because we didn't know if your battery would hold out. But if you got in a cell phone. So, here's what I'm going to say. If you're from northern Arizona, and we've got a pretty good signal up north, anywhere from Payson all the way around the loop up there, you know, in a big 180-degree sweep from the Salt River north. If you're up there, 602-508-0960, then we'll take you quick. How about that for just today, Jeremy? Can you handle that?
I think I can handle that.
If they're from Payson or anything up in that area, then we'll take them up real quick. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto. Larry Harker's has been around a long time, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and the reason why I like Larry Harker's Auto is just because when you walk in there, it looks like it's in the 30s, but when you talk to Bob, you recognize where he really is in this century. He really knows cars really well. It's a really nice shop, but it's not your highfalutin, spend a whole lot of money on fancy toolboxes and waxed floors. And it's not dirty either. It's a nice shop that screams, I know what I'm doing. And Bob is a great guy when it comes to talking with you about your cars. He knows diesel, he knows gas, and he's just a really, really nice guy. And he has the uncanny ability to get from you the information he needs to fix your car and do it in a manner that doesn't take hours and hours of diagnosis. So he'll ask you questions that you'll wonder, what the heck is he doing with this question? But in reality, he knows that if there's a vibration and it only happens here, that helps him diagnose your problem there. So just remember, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. I'm really, really proud to recommend them. All right.
Caller Carl.
Carl, good morning to you, buddy. How can we help you?
Yeah, Mark, good morning to you. I took my Mustang over to Raintree Auto on your recommendation. Anyway, 2.5 weeks ago, and the only two contacts I had was when I called and talked to a guy named Shane there, and I have not been able to have them call me back as regarding to the process of refixing my car, you know.
Okay.
I can't get a hold of them. They just won't call me back, you know.
Okay.
And,
I want you to send me an email, please.
I can't do that, Mark. I don't have a computer.
Okay. Will you call and leave a message? I'll give you a phone number.
Yeah. Well, I've got your, you know, I can, okay. I'll call your shop. And
call the shop and leave me a message on Monday, so that I can get it on Monday morning to remind me. And I will call Andy Val and I will call Paul, his son.
Okay.
And I will ask them what to explain to me how this happened.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you a question. Is there an insurance company involved?
Yeah, but when I, yes, there is.
Okay.
But when I took the car in, I told Shane, I said, I don't care what the insurance company is going to pay. I will pay you for my repairs of that car. Because the way I was told it, that they replace all the parts and, you know, and they don't do Bondo or pull out dents or all that crap. But I said, I'll pay you if the insurance company, I said, forget, if they give you a hard time, call me. I'll deal with the insurance company.
Okay.
You don't have to do that. But I was very specific when I said that to him.
Right. Okay, now, give me a snapshot. You're in an accident, and it's the other person's fault, and their insurance company's responsible for putting
right.
your car back together.
Channel 12 SUV.
Oh, Carl, come on.
It goes out of control, spins and hits me, then rolls over.
Okay. All right. So we're waiting for the insurance.
No, the adjuster's been there.
Okay. All right. Here, there's... I'm not going to pretend like I know what's wrong.
Yeah, I don't either.
Okay. But what happens is when you're dealing with an insurance company that has no particular need to put the fire out for somebody like Carl, who's not their customer.
Right.
And there may be other circumstances that say, hey, someone hit our van before we did this, so we don't know if our insurance company is going to be paying for it or if somebody hit the van and they did a hit and run, and so we have to wait for paint. And I don't know about all that, but I can tell you this. When I get a hold of Paul and Andy, they'll know within hours because I'm going to ask them to do that. And I'm also going to, if they don't call you back on Monday, you call me at work, you get a hold of Eddie, and I will give you Andy's cell phone number.
Okay.
And I want you to be nice to him. but it's entirely possible behind the scenes, if there's more than two vehicles involved in an accident or if there's liability, it takes 2 weeks for the insurance companies to come to a conclusion on who the heck's going to pay this bill. Meanwhile, they're not going to start with your deal because that's going to queer the whole deal. Because if we start fixing the car, then the insurance company wants to see the old parts, and we've already got new parts hung on. The old parts are in the dumpster or the old parts are on the ground. That creates a problem. So let me find out for you. I'll have an answer for you by 1 o'clock on Monday.
Mark, just yes. Channel 12 vehicle, he got 3 tickets from what I heard. I was the only car that he spun and hit, you know.
Okay.
He was in the high speed lane, and there was witnesses saying that he was exceeding the speed limit by quite a bit. So.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? Are you sure he wasn't driving it? That he didn't stole that? I'm just teasing you, Carl. All right. Are you done?
Yes, I am.
Are you all right? I promise. I have your home phone number too. So I promise they'll either call you by Monday.
Yeah.
I'll give you Andy's cell phone number.
Okay. Great. Thank
you, buddy. All righty. And. Yeah, every once in a while our shops they fall down. There's no excuse for lack of communication. It's whatever the excuse is, Carl should have already known. So that's an important thing. Okay, speaking of an attaboy, which we weren't, I want to read you one. I took my 1966 International pickup truck to a shop that you recommend for brake adjustment and hydraulic clutch adjustment and some questions about the upper control arm bushings and the radius arm bushings. I was more than a little afraid that some young guy with no experience on older vehicles would get the job and not know what to do. But that's not what happened. This kid, Eddie, was assigned to the job. He was obvious from the get-go that he knew what he was doing. Eddie made several trips to the waiting room to show me the worn clutch linkage, and he told me what he intended to do to get rid of the slop. He drilled out the old linkage and pressed in a new brass bushing, and before you knew it, the clutch and the brakes were perfect. He answered all my questions about the front end and some questions about the vacuum advance, which no one else was able to even discuss with me. So I'm going to be taking my old pickup truck back to Eddie for some work so he can work some magic for me. The building and the shop were impressive and spotlessly clean. Oh, this is nice. I was shocked to learn the building had been there 20 years or more. Thank you for your great experience. I'll be back. I'm getting too old to get up and down. Bob. And I think what's important here is that the gray-haired Eddie, and I talk about that a lot. I talk about there's nothing wrong with the kid with three whiskers, but if you've got a 66 International and you're having a tough time finding somebody who understands it, you're going to have to find somebody with gray hair in his nose or in his ears or on top of his head, and that's what that's all about. All righty. Action Auto, speaking of gray hair, Action Auto, Tom up at Action Auto, I-17 and Deer Valley Road, northwest corner. He's been around a long time, too. He's been working. He's got his AAA, He has a A-plus rating at the Better Business Bureau. Tom is trustworthy. He's loyal, friendly, all that stuff. He uses factory-recommended intervals for his maintenance services, which means to a consumer, what that means is they're not making it up. Let me tell you how people make it up. They go, you need to flush your cooling system every year. And then you look in the owner's manual and says, hey, it's got 100,000-mile coolant in it. And it says 5 years. Oh, you're in Arizona, though. Oh, yeah, this is... Now, you'll notice in that thing there that it says extremely hot or extremely cold conditions or stop-and-go traffic or dirty, dusty conditions or hauling trailers. All of that applies here. Me, if I were in that environment, I wouldn't say anything that I would say in church. But 'cause none of what I just said to you is true. The owner's manual was written for Arizona, Saudi Arabia, the Middle East, Germany, Sweden, Norway, and everybody else that has that car. So we can't pick and choose our way through. That's what Tom is saying. Maybe in a nicer way, but that's what Tom at Action Auto was saying. I-17 in Deer Valley since 1983. If you live in that area and you want to test your shop, then that's a good one. Let me also address something else. 602-508-0960 if you have a question. 602-508-0960. Let's pretend that in your world you've learned how to, and I'm gonna kind of wing this so that you can understand the difference in technicians in different environments. Perhaps many of you gentlemen out there have worked a particular kind of a piece of equipment for a long time. Maybe you've been in the backhoe business where you've been in the trenching business. A good friend of mine, a guy that I went to high school with, Bill McPeters, owns Valley Trenching. And he started with the backhoe with the four levers, and now they have joysticks. And he used to say that he could reach out with his bucket, and he could feel a fiber line that if he cut the fiber line, it would cost him millions of dollars in insurance. He could feel it and tap it. He'd feel it. And then he'd
pull it teeth
in just a little bit, and then he'd uncover the fiber line that's 20 feet in the ground. Now, he knows how to work that backhoe. He can pick your teeth with the backhoe teeth. He knows what he's doing. If you gave him a horse to ride, although he's a horse guy, but if you gave him a horse to ride and he's never been on a horse, he may not know what to do. That's exactly what we talk about when we talk about car repair. There's guys out there that have skills that are broad, but then you have other guys out there that skills are pretty focused. You have just the guy that works on Honda, just the guy that works on Mercury, just the guy that works on Fords, and then you got the guy that works on everything. Well, the guy that works on everything is like a veterinarian. The veterinarian does dogs and cats and horses and snakes and birds and frogs and whatever. That's the veterinarian. But then you got the heart doctor, the lung doctor, you got the leg doctor, the knee doctor, the hip doctor, the toe doctor, you got the female doctor, you got all those doctors that have specialized and they have real focused. But if you ask
someone who does nothing but knees about an ear problem, he may refer you. That's the same way in our industry. And I'm not saying that's good or that's bad. I'm just saying that's the same way. So in the dealership environment, the guys are really good. They don't do well in my world. Because when I hire them and they come and they've worked on ABC cars for 10 years and I give them an LMP car, they just want to go in the bathroom and cry. I mean, if they come to me after they've been working on Fords forever and I ask them to take this Mercedes and do rear brakes on it and don't forget to use a scanner to dump the pressure on the...
2 minutes.
They don't know. I'm not finding fault with them. What I'm saying is there's a difference. There's a difference. In the independent market, you have guys that are MacGyvers that are allowed to build brass bushings for a 66 International truck. They're allowed to do things that weren't in the book. And typically, they're not engineers. They're really good failure analysis guys because diagnostic procedure has to do with failure analysis. We have to figure out what's wrong and then why it failed, and then we have to fix it so it doesn't happen again. We don't need a 4-year or 6-year degree. We don't need to be an engineer. This is how we do it. We get our learning in a classroom. We get our learning in the workshop area. We're not taught that in the classroom. They only test auto mechanics skills, but there's no classes we take. You learn it, and then they test you. And if you pass, you pass, and if you don't, you don't. So I'm proud to tell you, like many of the people in my shop and many of the people I know, I am an ASC Master Tech, and I have been for 30-some-odd years, and I've been in business 34 years. But my heart's with you. I'm here for you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Last, I want to tell you about Phoenix Body Works. And Phoenix Body Works is a great place up in North Phoenix. Why is Phoenix Body Works a great place? It's because Greg's going to take care of you and not let anybody take advantage of you, whether it's your insurance company or the other insurance company or whatever. He is a good guy. So when it comes down to having your car fixed, and perhaps maybe it might be one of those situations where the other driver's insurance company is going to take care of your car and you really want somebody to hold the bat up and take good care of you and make sure that you don't get the short end of this baseball bat, then Greg at Phoenix Body Works is someone that you should consider. Greg at Phoenix Body Works. And don't forget, they're a half block north of Deer Valley Road off of 19th Avenue. Greg at Phoenix Body Works. We'll be right back.
And settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled out to my Chevrolet, I climbed out up inside.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for spending your Saturday with me, and I appreciate you doing that. And before we go on, and we're going to get Tracy and Tom real quick, I want to tell you the phone number, 602-508-0960. There's three lines open now, 602-508-0960. Again, there's three lines open yet. And I want to tell you about Quality Transmission real quick, and I just want to tell you this. The newest information I have about this one gentleman that was struggling was the Quality Transmission was the one who virtually hit the nail on the head with respect to the final price of the transmission. So there was a situation where a gentleman had a transmission that failed, and he was kind of bidding it all over the place. And I asked him if I could kind of just shadow him and watch him, and come to find out the number that Quality Transmission gave happened to be virtually exactly what the number was that ultimately fixed the transmission on the car. And it was a complete overhaul, folks. It wasn't anything short of that. It was just a complete overhaul. So that's kind of an interesting concept because, again, it's experience. It has everything to do with how well you're able to handle it. Tracy, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning. I have a 2000 Honda Odyssey that has 177,000 miles on it, and we've had a transmission leak in it probably about going on 2 years, but since it was so old, we just decided to the mechanic we went to just said we could just keep putting transmission fluid in it.
Mm-hmm.
Our situation now is we've got a daughter that's getting close to getting her license, and we're trying to figure out, it still runs really well. AC runs good. The only problem is we got this darn engine light that kind of keeps presenting its little head every once in a while. We take it in, and sometimes we'll change the gas cap or something else, but it's on again, and I'm struggling with whether to put money into a car that's, you know, 177,000 miles, 14 years old, and we know it's got transmission problems, and I'm trying to figure out, when do you say bye-bye, and when do you sit there and go, it's probably got another 50,000 miles in it?
Okay, I can answer that for you. It's really a matter of math.
Okay.
If you buy another vehicle, the license plates and sales tax, whether it's used or new, is going to probably, if you buy it in that kind of an environment, otherwise you buy it from somebody where you have to pay sales tax. On a $5,000 car, we got $500 worth of sales tax. And then the license plates are going to be another couple hundred dollars. So automatically we're talking about this transition is going to start at about $750 out of our pocket expense. And it's going to grow from there.
Okay.
Then, if I were to say to you, Tracy, I will assume 100% of the responsibility for the maintenance on that van. Maintenance. Everything that breaks, no matter what, for $250 a month for the next 3 years. Would you take that? You're going to pay the fuel and the transmission, or the fuel and the insurance, and all the maintenance I'm wiping off your plate. And if you whittle me down, I'll go $200.
You mean I would pay you $200 a month, and you would take care of the fuel and all that?
No, you're going to take care of the fuel and the insurance. I'm going to take care of all the check engine lights. I'm going to take care of the transmission when it fails. I'm going to take care of every maintenance thing for the next 2 years. Everything that's maintenance-wise, which takes that completely away from you.
Mm-hmm.
If $200 isn't good, then tell me what you would pay me. Would you pay me $100?
Yeah, probably.
Of course you would. You can't even rent a car for $200 a week. You can't rent a car for $200 a month. Basically what I'm saying to you is we're going to turn this into a rental. Okay, now let's think about the math there. If I charge you $200 a month for 24 months, I'm at $4,800, right?
Right.
I can do everything you ask me to do for that much money. I can put a new transmission in that for you for that. I can handle that. So you look at it from a financial point of view. The engine's good, and we've got some leak that's not been diagnosed yet on the Honda Odyssey, right? No one's really said this is what it's going to cost to fix it.
No, they actually did. 2 years ago, we were going to get ready to go to my nephew's wedding in Texas, and so I had taken it in, and when I was pulling out of the garage, I noticed that there was some dripping on. We were down to one car at that time, so our mechanic said, can you leave it? I said, yes, but I said, we have to go. So we had to rent a van to go to Texas from the wedding. And while we were just arriving in Texas, he told us it either needed to be rebuilt or we needed to get one replaced. And he says, I recommend rebuilding because you never know what you're going to get, you know, as far as from a previous van, if it's going to work in your car. And he gave us an estimate at that time. I think it was $3,800 for a rebuild, and if we got one from a different van, then it was going to be like $45 or something like that.
Okay. All right, well, there's nobody that has a new one for your van, so they're all rebuilt, and they're all rebuilt by different people, different manufacturers, there's a big place in the Midwest that buys junk transmissions and rebuilds them and sells them to guys like me to put them in, and they cover, you know, they have good warranties, stuff like that. So we're talking about a $3,300 transmission, or maybe something that's going to be in the $3,000 to $4,000. Let's open that up to realistically. If you had to pay $3,000 to fix the transmission leak, and to fix the transmission, and I agree that probably you're best off to have the transmission replaced. I agree with all that. If that's the case, $3,000 divided by the next 30 months is $100 a month. So I'm going to turn it around. Tracy, would you pay me $100 a month, and I'll fix the transmission leak, and you pay me $100 a month for the next 30 months?
Probably.
Yeah, and see, that's my point. My point is we don't have to pay license plates. This vehicle's already paid for, so we really have to say, what are we faced with? Now, one of the things that whenever you have that light on that said that check engine light on, never pay a dime and never authorize anything until you know exactly what the code is, because here's what happens. The code might be a P101. So you come in and I say, oh, it's gas cap. So I charge you a diagnostic fee and I charge you for gas cap. And then a week later, 2 months later, whatever, comes back. I don't tell you it's the same code 101, but I sell you a vent solenoid. and you say fine. And then it doesn't come on for another 3 or 4 weeks, and you bring it back or a month or 2 months, but it's got the P101 in it again. And so each time, I don't tell you really what the code is, but it's the same circuit over and over and over again. Don't okay. ever let that happen to you, because once we pay to have the circuit fixed, it shouldn't come back for 6 months. If it okay. comes back, so the check engine light's kind of like, we don't have that on the table right now, right?
Well, it's on now.
Okay. It's yellow, right? It's not red.
It's red.
It's red.
It's red.
Okay. And what does that red light tell you? Red light is usually brakes, ABS, airbags. Does it kind of tell you anything?
Well, I mean, when you say yellow, the engine light never has been yellow. It just, on that one, when it lights up, it just lights up the little thing that looks like an engine.
Okay. It should be like yellow or orange, maybe, instead of red.
Well, I'm not in it right now. Okay. I'm in my other van, but I think it looks more on the red side, so I guess I would say orange.
Okay, and here's why it's important. The distinction is any dashboard light that reds means stop right now, don't waste another minute looking, don't do nothing, pull off to the side of the road and shut this thing off.
Okay.
That's what red means. But most everything is yellow today. And yellow means, hey, wake up, Tracy, we got a problem, but you're in Omaha, I'm sure you can drive to the next gas station or the next place, you can drive 100 miles, 200 miles, and Tracy, if you want to really chance it, Mark Salem's driven his truck with a yellow check engine light on for 1,000 miles, and he was okay. So even that's what your owner's manual says. It says that it's just caution, wake up, something's going on, but you can continue to drive. Because the computer's capable of changing that from a yellow light to a red light. But just like traffic okay. signals, they're all colored. I think the Odyssey bothers me because they are a well-known problem. But,
okay.
But it's worth, you can't rent a car for $300 a month. So I'm going to say to you, if you were to budget just $200 a month for maintenance, I can virtually promise you, with the exception of the transmission bill, you're not going to spend $2,400 a month in maintenance on that van. You're not going to. So think of it that way. Think, I'm going to rent it from myself for $200 a month. I'm going to put $200 a month aside, and I'm going to pay for the maintenance, and I'm going to put my child in this. I always did that. I got an inexpensive car for my kids because they're going to scrape the pole at McDonald's, they're going to damage the outside, they're going to damage the inside, and every once in a while they damage the engine. And I'd much rather them do that on an old car than my car or my wife's car or a new car.
Right.
I like the idea. And it's not, the van, and it's your daughter, that's a transition I can live with. Do you understand the difference between putting a 16-year-old boy in a van and your daughter in a van?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I would like to see you go out. No, what part of town do you live in, real quick?
I live in the North Phoenix, Tatum and Bell area.
Tatum and Bell.
Like TV Mall area.
Okay. Kelly Clark is at 40th and Bell Road. 41st Street and Bell Road. I'd stop by and say to Kelly, look at my car and either bid a transmission replacement or tell me who you go in this geographical area. Okay?
Okay.
And Kelly Clark, 41st Street and Bell. Now, I've got transmission shops in the northwest, in the south, and in the east, but that northeast corner, I don't have any transmission shops up there. But I am going to send you, how close are you to Rose, the I-17 and the 101?
By freeway, probably 20 minutes, not
okay.
far.
Now that's too far. Just talk to Kelly Clark. Talk to the guys at Kelly Clark, and who do you use or will you bid this? Because, and I want to tell you something else. Transmission fluid is slightly flammable under the right conditions. Slightly flammable under the right conditions. Typically, we don't see the transmission fires that we used to see in the old days.
Okay.
So there is that concern, and what you're saying to me is I fed the leak for many years.
As
it got low, there's really nothing wrong with that. People do that all the time.
Okay.
So let's find out how much the transmission repair is going to be, and then I think then you can make an intelligent decision. But then I want you to bounce back to the $200 a month or $100 a month and say, I'm just going to budget that much for the use of the car. And I think at the end of the year, you're going to find out you have money left over in that account. Whether you start with 100 a month or 200 a month or 300 a month, you're going to have money there.
So this engine light, do you think that's linked to the transmission then?
I doubt it. You said it was a 2000. The thing's 14 years old. It has 177,000 miles. And I'm not quite sure we monitored, unless there's an obvious problem where you're missing second gear, or it starts off in third gear, or there's a really obvious drivability problem, the check engine light might see that.
30
but
seconds.
All this other stuff, no, the answer's no.
Okay, because it's really frustrating. We've probably had that thing addressed in the last, I'd say, well, like I said, we haven't done anything with it in the last probably year and a half, but it comes on and then they'll go off, we'll take it in, they'll read it, they'll say, they'll reset it and they'll say, just see if it comes on again, because they've tested their thing and they can't find anything wrong.
You stay here because I'm going to address that, because you're talking about a vapor recovery system, and I'll address that on the other side. Tom, I'm going to get you first, but Tracy, you stay right there. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Mark Salem, and I am here at your service, 602-508-0960. And real quick, we're going to finish up with Tracy. Tracy, you've had this intermittent check engine light that comes on and goes off and comes on, and sometimes they check it and they can't find anything, and then they turn it off, and then they say to you, you know, let us know if it comes back on. Is that kind of a synopsis?
Right.
Okay. Here's the downside to that. Sooner or later, you got to go to emissions. And what's happening is that the computer's seeing a problem and it turns on the light. And if you disconnect the battery cable, the negative battery cable, and wave it around your head five times and howl at the moon twice, then that just, I'm trying to say, you know, it takes 20 seconds. Then you put it back on, it erases the memory, but the light will come back on. If we don't fix anything, the light will come back on. And then here's what happens. After the computer continues to check that circuit time and time and time and time again, there's called monitors in there. And these monitors are a bunch of these little bitty guys that people hate that stand there and watch all these circuits. And they got their arms crossed inside the computer, and the emissions guy go, "Hey, Mr. Emission Monitor, how you doing?" And he goes, "I'm fine, what do you want?" And the emission guy goes, "I want to know if everything's okay in that circuit." And the little monitor says, "I haven't seen anything that suggests that that circuit's good, so I'm not going to give him a passing grade. I'm going to tell you, no, I am not going to say that that circuit's good." So this monitor is going to tell on you. And it's going and as long as the monitor doesn't reset and say, "Oh, Mr. Emissions Person, there's no problem. I've been watching this thing for now 6 months and everything is just hunky-dory, just fine, just, it's, everything's okay." So that's going to bite you sooner or later. Maybe you gather up all those bills and try to determine what the number of that code is, and maybe it's time for a fresh pair of eyes to get that thing taken care of. And certainly you got to do it 2 or 3 months before you have to go through your next emissions test, or otherwise you're going to have problems.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Good
luck to you. And let me know, hopefully Kelly Clark's guys can help guide you up there with respect to the transmission, because they're in that area, and I'm sure they don't drive to Sun City to use one of, you know, our shops there, but that northeast corner of the valley, I don't have a good transmission shop for you up there.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you.
Alrighty. And Tom, thank you for holding. As long as you did, how can I help you?
Yes, Mark, I hope this is an easy solution. I got an old Corvette, 67, and it's kind of been redone on the frame, suspension-wise, and everything else. It does have the VIT block with a 4-speed, and when you drive it down the road, say 50, 60 miles an hour, and you just kind of let off on the gas, give it gas, it has like a jerk. It kind of jerks you. It did it in the beginning, seemed to go away, now it's back.
Okay. Does it feel like there might even be a little clunk there when you're in third gear or fourth gear, 40, 45 miles an hour, and you just kind of, you throttle it up and gently, and you let go, and then you throttle it back up. Does it seem like that there's a little bit of play somewhere?
No, it doesn't seem like there's a clunk. I was just thinking maybe it was fuel or something. I mean, all the U-joints were done on the half shafts and, of course, the drive shaft and all. And like I said, it seemed to do it in the beginning, seemed to go away. And I didn't drive it for a while. I had some problems medical-wise, and we took it for a ride today, and it seems to be back. Just like you go 50, 60 miles an hour, and you just kind of ease off on the gas, and you just give it the gas, and it gives like a jerk.
Okay. Okay, and what year is it?
It's a 67.
Okay. Well, the carburetor has three different circuits. It has an idle circuit, and it has a cruise circuit, and it has a wide open throttle, let's get the heck out of here circuit.
Exactly.
When you back off the throttle with the manual transmission, the automatic transmission would kind of go into a neutral, but it would still apply a load. In your particular case, there is no load because it's four speed. So when you back off the throttle, it kind of goes into neutral. And there may be some deceleration load. Then when you come back on it, would it be more proper? It would be like a kind of a hesitation. There's kind of a flat spot in the throttle. So when I come back on the throttle, nothing happens.
Yeah, it seems to be that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's got three deuces on it, but of course it's just the two running at the time.
Okay. It's got three deuces on it.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. You need to tell me that at the beginning.
Well, I mean, the two barrel one, I'm just driving it down that way. I'm not getting on it. The other ones are just dumpers, you know?
Okay. The process is kind of the same, but does this have progressive linkage on it where you can run off the middle two barrel and then the other ones don't work until you go three-quarter throttle?
No, it's all factory. It's got the vacuum lines on it and all, yeah.
All right, so we're using all three of them at the same time. The issue is you don't have an EGR valve on that because it's too old for an EGR valve. We didn't even do EGR valves till 76 or something like that, to 73. So it's not an EGR valve. So the question is this a fuel supply problem? So if I were driving that car, I would put a propane tank on my right hip. I would actually make you drive. I'd be in the passenger side, and I'd have about 14 feet of rubber hose, and I'd stick it right down the throat of that middle carburetor. And I'd make you go out and show me what's going on. Then as you do that, and after I know exactly what you're talking about, I'm going to take this little propane tank that you usually have on your lantern, and I'm going to open it up about a quarter turn. And I'm going to say, do it again, do it again, do it again. And I'm hoping that as I add fuel to one of those carburetors, and we may move it around some, I'm hoping as I add fuel to it, we're going to eliminate that. And when we do, we know, fuel supply. Now the question is, which one of the three is causing us the problem? And I'm going to move the hose from the first one to the second one to the third one and see if we can determine that. But you're not going to get me in your car for less than $105 an hour. And this is going to take us an hour. and we're going to have fun doing it, but this is the diagnostic process that we're going to use that many guys my age would use.
So you're telling me all three carburetors are working at the same time?
Well, didn't you say that I thought you said that all the linkage was factory.
Yeah, it is.
If that's the case, then one is connected to two, just like two is connected to three.
Okay.
And I'm thinking that you can look and see, but as you throttle up, if it's factory, they wouldn't run a big block Chevrolet with a two-barrel carburetor.
2 minutes.
And they wouldn't use the other two barrels, the other four barrels that you have sitting there just on wide open throttle because that two-barrel couldn't move enough air for the big block.
Okay.
So it just can't. So I'm thinking, there's guys out there that do progressive linkage, so otherwise the first carburetor, the big carburetor, is going to take 50% of the throttle, but after we get to 55%, then we're going to start kicking those other two bears in, and we're going to start pumping some fuel to that big block Chevrolet. So what part of town do you live in?
Up by Dynamite and Tatum.
Okay.
Yeah, you helped me before.
Yeah, I think
on emails and stuff like that. And
here's what I'm thinking. I want you to call. Tom Blackwell is not on my list. Okay, not on my list, so the guarantees don't extend to Blackwell Automotive. And I know that Tom is working a deal right now
on
a trucking company in Texas. Tom could figure this out.
Okay,
he's the only one I know that could figure it out, and I know that we could figure it out. I just don't know anybody who's really, really good on the multiple carburetor Corvettes that's not going to guess with your money.
Okay.
So I'd call Blackwell and see if he's scheduled in. And if he's scheduled in, then make an appointment with him to drive your car. But it could also be, it could be a vacuum leak. It could be too much air. Or it could be not enough fuel. It could be too much fuel. It could be a float level that's a problem. It could be an ignition problem. It could be a vacuum advance or a mechanical advance problem.
Okay.
It could be, so we have to determine ignition or fuel first, and then we'll be able to fix it.
30 seconds.
But that's what it's all about. So that's kind of what has to be what happened. Is it a daily driver?
Well, it could be, but we just take it out, you know, on a weekend, early in the morning time. In fact, we took it out right after 5 o'clock.
All right. I gotta run, but let me ask you a question. Okay. Just stay there. I'll be right back. The hour of 11 o'clock. We're going to finish up with Tom real quick. We're going to grab Adam. And then if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Hey, Tom, I'm glad I had the break to think about this. I hope you have a pencil and paper handy, do you?
In a second. Okay. I'd like to mention one thing. It doesn't seem to do it at lower speed, so that's what I'm thinking is kind of fuel.
Well,
if
it were a fuel problem, if you got out there on dynamite on a Sunday morning after the bicyclists leave or before they got there and aired that thing out, then if you can kick it up into a high RPM, high load range and it doesn't run out of fuel, then it's not likely going to be a fuel problem. It's not going to likely to be a fuel problem from a supply point of view or a pressure point of view. It could be that we've got a fuel bleed in one of the carburetors, a fuel jet plugged up, so when we tip the throttle back in, we have to suck fuel past that blockage or compensate it from some other way. But
this is,
alright, on the west side of town, Mike's Auto Tech.
Okay.
Tom Action Auto.
Okay, Tom Action Auto, okay.
Right. And 25th Street Auto.
25th Street Auto.
Those are all guys that have been around a long time. We're all old hot rodders, and those would be each one of those guys would be worth a call. And I think what you're talking about, we need to narrow it down. Manual transmission.
I interrupted you.
Manual transmission, big block Chevrolet, cruising down the road at 2,200 RPM. Back off the throttle. Come back on the throttle, and there's a little of a tip-in hesitation. I'm coming back on the throttle.
It's definitely not a clunk.
Okay. The reason I asked you about the clunk is because if there's a clunk, it's a suspension problem or a drive shaft problem, and you eliminated that, so I threw that out. I just wanted to make sure to eliminate that early. So you're talking about a tip-in hesitation from a four-speed big block with a three-deuce setup, okay?
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Mark.
All right, good luck to you, Tom. Thank you. Adam, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you today, Adam?
Well, I got a question. I've got an 05 Excursion with a 6-liter diesel, and I'm getting a code that's coming up for my EGR valve.
Okay.
And I don't remember the exact code anymore, but my question to you is that something I can wait for a week to take to the shop, or does that need to be looked at right away?
You know, when you say 6-liter Ford diesel and you say EGR, it makes me quiver. There's an EGR cooler underneath the intake manifold. And exhaust coming into the EGR, and the EGR is just this valve that sits on top of two pipes. And all it's going to do is open and connect the two pipes. So we got exhaust coming up one pipe, and then on the other side, we're going to send it right back to the air intake side. Otherwise, we're going to reburn it again. So when you have an EGR code, I get kind of nervous. That's one of them that on the 6-liter makes me nervous, and it's unfortunate because if Alan, my son, he was scheduled to be here with me this morning, but we had a problem over at the car wash. Alan would know that, no problem. So I'm going to give you the second best person I know. I want you to call Monday morning if it's okay with you, and I'll give you the number, and you're going to ask Alan this question.
Yeah.
Okay, it's 480-598-1234. Alan Salem, I got this EGR code, and if you have the code number, give it to him. And
I'll get it by then, I'll have it written down.
He'll know, and one of our techs, Dale Scheifler, the two of them will know. They'll know all the possibilities, and they'll be able to say to you, 70% of the time, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and 10% of the time, da-da-da-da-da, and the other one is a real wild card. So, now, in the absence of any water in the oil, if the oil damper turns milky or there's any oil in the coolant, and in the absence of any other drivability problems, I would think you're safe to wait until you can accommodate the repair, accommodate the diagnosis. But if there's any drivability concerns or any smells or any oil in the overflow jug, then I'm going to change my mind and say no, I don't think you should be driving it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you much.
You betcha. Thompson's Auto Repair is over in Mesa. They've been around since 1970. And Brian and Thelma is a husband and wife that really, 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 once you meet them, once you shake their hand, you'll understand why they're one of my favorites. All of my shops are favorites, but they are certainly a favorite because they are such great people. And this is their kind of their motto. We're going to treat you and your car, and we're going to suggest repairs on you and your car the same way we do our own mothers and our fathers. And that just means a lot. That means a lot because they're telling you they're honestly going to take care of you. They understand the value of your car. They understand how important it is to you. But you're not going to get any different of a service than they provide to their own mothers and fathers. And that's kind of important. And I can tell you there is nothing at all that would suggest that that's not true. So Thompson's Auto Repair, Stapley and Main Street, just east. If you don't have a good shop, that's a good shop. It's 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. The lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. So if you have a car question, you're welcome to give us a call anytime you want. Right now is a good time because the lines are wide, wide, wide open. And I have been having trouble with my levels all day long this morning, and I just can't seem to figure out what the heck I'm doing wrong. But hopefully and it's not there on your end, Jeremy. It's on my end because I'm getting two different levels on my screen in front of me.
Sounding good.
Okay, man. I appreciate that. This portion of Unhinged is brought to you by Kurt's Auto Repair. He's up on Bell and I-17. And as I've told you before, Kurtz is a great guy. He's got a great family. But the best part about Kurtz is he's doing something that they used to do in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. But he continues to do that, and that's this. If you're a new customer and you bring your car in and trust Kurt for the diagnostic and the repair of your car or the maintenance in your car, the next day or so, his wife will stop by your house and dropped off some home-baked goods. And that's their way of saying thank you for trusting us to work on your car. Kurt has been doing that for a long time. Not too long ago, a lady called me who lived in that area, and she had been told that the engine on her truck was bad. And they were talking estimates of $3,000 and $4,000 and $5,000 and $6,000. And I says, there's something that bothers me about this story, and it has nothing to do with you regurgitating what you've been told. I understand that. And so to talk to you about it, really, but just take it over to Kurtz and have him check it. And Kurtz put an oil pressure switch and did some other minor work to the oil pressure system, and she's still driving the truck. It never needed a motor.
Callers John, then Mike.
And admittedly, one of the persons that said he needed a motor did it over the phone, but you have to say to yourself, how valid is a diagnosis over the phone? Even my own. Let's throw my tail end in there. I'm only as good as the information you give me. Now, I think I could probably come up with people that write me afterwards that say you were right about 30 to 40% of the time. The rest of the time, I know the path to get there, but I'm not going to be able to guess what's wrong with your car. And second of all, I'm sure not going to be able to guess the repair number. The estimate number. So think about that when you're calling around and stuff like that. John, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Well, good morning, Mark. I'm just calling to thank you for all the work you do because I used one of your referrals on your MarkSalem.com or your website.
Uh-huh.
And it was Kelly Clark over here on Bell Road. They worked on my wife's van this week and said, hey, it's going to be an alternator. And they went through three alternators. It wasn't it. They traced it down to a starter that had a broken piece on it. The car runs great. Now, they charged me a little more, but that was because they had more diagnostic to do, and they were always up front with me. So what I'm calling to say is thank you very much for all the work you do and the honesty of the people that you do recommend because, you know, it sure saved me a lot of time and swearing working on my wife's van, but I didn't know what I was doing, you know, so...
Listen, buddy, you have no idea how much I know that. I told my wife said to me, I don't know, years ago, she said, why do you go out of your way to be friendly to the kids in the neighborhood? And I said, because those kids are going to grow up to egg-throwing teenagers. And as long as I'm airing up their bike tires and greasing their chains and laughing with them, and they know they can come over and watch me work in the garage, and they know that they're welcome, then they're not going to egg our house. And she says, that's pretty weak. And I said, well, we'll find out, won't we? So, but let me ask you a question. What was the symptoms you went in for?
The van was very hesitant on gas. When I would press the gas down, it would be like I had a weak fuel system.
Okay. So there's kind of a blah.
Yep.
Okay. Bingo. And then how did we get from there to an alternator?
They said the alternator was bad.
Okay, so they put one on, then they put the second, then they put the third, and did they tell you it's not the alternator after the third one?
Yes.
Okay.
And they said it's the starter, and what it was the positive peg that sticks out of the starter that the cable connects to was broken, and it fell off in the mechanic's hand. But they said everything is interlined as far as the fuel pump, the starter, and all that.
They're right. So they fixed the bad connection where the battery meets the entire rest of the electrical system. And did you leave there with your old alternator or a new one?
I left with my old alternator, but a new starter.
Okay. All right. That's exactly what I want to hear.
No, and that's what I asked the guy, too. I said, now do I have a new alternator? And he goes, nope, you're not putting on parts that we don't need to put on.
Oh, man, you have no idea how good that makes me feel, because that's exactly what we're supposed to do. Now, Kelly and Rita are friends of mine, and they've been friends of mine for a long time. Have you ever been on a houseboat?
No, but I heard the story about it once.
You heard the story about making a nest?
No, I heard a story about standing up in the bathroom. I was laughing as hard as you are.
For the rest of you that missed the story, I went to Kelly and Rita's houseboat, and Rita, a red-haired fireball, she's just the nicest woman in the world. But I want to tell you something. If you say something that offends her, she's going to she may not even raise her hand to tell you that you offended her, but she'll let you know. So we get on the board, and she says, Mark, come here. So she takes me into the bathroom, and she says, we do not stand up and go to the bathroom. I don't care how good of a name you are, you will sit down, and you will use the bathroom that way. And if you're going to sit down and do something other than stand up, I want you to put toilet paper in there and build a nest.
And I said,
Rita, I usually just hang my butt over the outrails outside there, but I'll do whatever you want me to do. So the next morning, Rita's making breakfast. The bathroom's right around the corner. I'm this kind of a person. My mind is sick. Everybody that knows me personally knows I'm a sick son of a gun. And I get a big pitcher of water, and I go into the bathroom, and I shut the door, and I hold the pitcher up as high as I can, and I start running that pitcher into the water, and clearly from the kitchen she can hear that I am not sitting down when I'm going potty, I'm standing up. And she came through that door at 400 miles an hour. And Kelly, to this day, Kelly laughs, and he says, I don't remember anybody getting her worse than you did. And I said, that's really not something I'm bragging about, because I'm still scared of Rita. But she also said, the nest, and I said, don't worry about it. I said, I'm not going to waste the toilet paper to build a nest in the thing, I'm just going to use the jet ski and go out in the water, because that's what us cowboys do. So anyway, when you stop by there, you can say, is that the truth? Is Mark telling the truth about that? And see what the guys say there at 41st and Bell.
That's what I'll do, because I'm taking the muffins. I'm a baker for Costco. I take the muffins after I get done helping, because they were so honest to me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm gonna tape this, and I'm gonna send it to Kelly, and I'm gonna tell him this is what all of us are about. This kind of good car repair is what it's all about. And I'm blessed beyond my wildest dreams to be able to identify the very best 50 or 60 shops in town that continue to do it this way. So thank you for calling. Thank you.
And thank you for doing that.
All righty, John. Thank you. Bye bye, Mike. You're up next, buddy. Hi, Mike.
Hey, I've got a 2005 Dodge Grand Caravan, and lately, as I'm accelerating, mainly to get on the freeways, I have no oomph. And when I start to shift, and once I get over about 3,500 RPMs, it starts making almost like when a teapot's done, like a little wee. And then if I let off the gas, it'll shift gear, and then I can get into a lower gear and maintain speed or increased speed.
Okay, you've really done a great job. I think I can hit this. I'm 75% sure you have an exhaust restriction. I think the muffler's come apart and plugged into the cat, or the cat's come apart and plugged into the muffler, or maybe the cat's plugged up and that wheezing noise you're hearing is air. The front side of the exhaust is loaded up with lots of air, but you can imagine the potato's been shoved in the tailpipe, and so it ain't coming out the back end.
Okay.
And so what part of town do you live in?
I live over here on 43rd and Thunderbird, and yeah, I usually go to Kurt's up there.
Yeah, are you pretty handy? You got a drill, a little.
Oh,
Yes.
No. Uh-huh. Okay. Here's what you really should do. Now, everyone should own a temperature gun from Harbor Freight. Now, if you took the temperature gun and you got it good and hot, and you just crawled underneath it real quick and you gunned from the front and you went every foot down the exhaust. 1 foot, 2 foot, 3 foot. When you got to a point, you'd find that this is hot, number three is a hot section and number four isn't. So there's my restriction.
Okay.
But you can also drill a couple of holes, one in about 6 to 8 inches in front of the catalytic converter in the pipe and one behind it. And then what you do is you just get in the car and run it up to about 2,500 RPM and just start to get really, really good and hot. Then you get underneath there with gloved hands, and your hands are about 4 or 5 inches away from the hole. And as you can expect, if the catalytic converter is plugged, the front hole towards the engine, the air that's going to come out of that is going to come out like a jet engine. And behind the catalytic converter, there'll be nothing to blow out a match. Does that make sense?
Makes sense to me.
All right. That's how we test it. Then you can do the muffler as well. And then when you're done, put a couple of sheet metal screws in those two holes. And you're done.
Yeah, to plug them up.
Yeah.
So.
And if you go in there and just tell Kurtz, I would say to Kurtz, let me describe my problem and I think I can even show it to you. Come take a ride with me or whatever. And then he calls you and just say, if it's plugged up, did you drill any holes in my exhaust? And then he'll probably say yeah, and say, did you put screws in them or did you weld them up? And he'll say, I put screws in them. And then you say, I prefer you weld them up. And what, you know what Kurt's going to do? He's going to say,
hate me.
No problem. No, he isn't. He's going to say, no problem. And then after he agrees to welding them up, you say, Salem said that.
Oh, no.
Real
quick on a second question. I took my daughter's car in there. She had a 96 Camry, and it was the code was the knock sensor. So I replaced the left bank, the right bank, and how long does she have to run that car? I mean, the check engine light's not on now because obviously you've been pulling it off the battery. How long does she have to run that car to find that back if the code's still there or not?
Actually, with no check engine light, that's a good sign that it's not. And typically, the monitor will reset to a perfect condition within 5 to 15 days. And here's what the monitor has to see, and this is craziness. I'm the monitor. I'm watching the knock sensor. And what I want to see is I want to see the car go through 3 or 4 heat cycles. Otherwise, I want to see it start cold and end up hot 3 or 4 times. I want to see so many miles at 10 miles an hour, 20, 30. I want to see RPM range here, here, here. I want to see air conditioning on, air conditioning off. I want to see this ambient temperature. I want to see that. And so I have all these parameters and all these cups that I need to fill. And so as your daughter drives that vehicle, it looks and goes, oh, she was just doing 2,800 for 3 minutes. And it looks at the charts and goes, okay, I can check that off. After all that check mark gets done, then the monitor is reset. To be honest with you, if it's been 15 days since they put the knock sensors in or fixed that circuit, the monitor has already reset.
Now, does she need to go up on the freeway? Because she lives real close to work. All she does is go to work, go home, go to work, go home, maybe to a friend's house. Does she need to get that on the freeway to really bump it up at one point?
Well, no. I think on the 05, aren't they just going to plug in underneath her dash and look and see if the monitors have been reset and the codes? There is no tailpipe test.
Okay.
Now, for those of you that are unsure what you should do is, this is the deal. If you're unsure as to how they're going to test your car and the vehicle emissions, to give yourself the best chance and to make sure that the values you give them are correct, if you're sitting in line, I want you to sit in line. I don't care if the air's on or off. I want it in neutral or park, and I want the RPMs up a tad, and I want you to sit there
at about
the RPM somewhere around 1,500 RPM. Keep the motor warm, keep the exhaust warm, keep everything kind of going. Now, if you're 7 or 8 cars deep, forget it. When you're 3 up in the front, then go ahead and start it up, turn the air, you can turn the air on whenever you want. And just keep the idle up, and let's keep that motor good and hot, let's keep the catalytic converter lit.
Okay.
But in your daughter's case, they're going to plug in underneath the dash, the monitor's going to say 10-4, and they're going to send her on her way.
Yeah, because we were getting ready to take it down there, and I just wasn't sure if I needed to drive it anymore for.
In the old days, yes, but not now.
Okay.
All right, cool. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Mark.
You bet. And let me tell you about as much as used car salesmen, auto mechanics, and lawyers have in common, which is that nobody ever says that they want their daughter to marry a car mechanic.
1 minute.
A lawyer or a used car salesman. Robert Ramirez Law is a good guy. He's an Arizona native. He's practiced all kinds of law in the Phoenix area his entire career. He works closely with everyone, his staff, the clients, the experts, everybody, to ensure that you're treated fairly. And he's not shy about telling you, no, I don't think this is a case that I want because of this, 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 or yes. He's settled and litigated lots of cases. He sat in the courtroom. He's been in front of the judges. He has that experience. He also has the experience to be able to guide you. So if you have a law question, maybe it's a divorce, maybe it's you want to send a nasty gram to your neighbor, whatever the situation is, call Robert Ramirez Law, and he will guide you to somebody who can kind of help you out and determine. So while Robert may not do divorces, he'll know somebody who does a divorce. And I hope that's not in your future. Until then, please drive safely. Wear your seatbelt. Don't drink and drive. And if somebody does something nice for you, just reach your hand out and say thank you. It's still a nice day.